For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
This program is paid for by Investor Schooling. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Investor Schooling or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3 Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. This is Investor Schooling Live with your host, Larry Steinhaus, CEO of Investor Schooling.
All right, everybody, good afternoon, and welcome to Investor Schooling Live. Hey, Investor Schooling Live is transmitting from the Investor Schooling Studios right here in the Investor Schooling headquarters. I am Larry Steinhaus, and I am the CEO of Investor Schooling. Hey, thanks for listening, and get ready to learn something about real estate investing, stock options, and many more things about money that I bet you didn't know. You can call us anytime during this show with your questions, and I'm going to tell you right now, write this number down, because this is going to be a great show. Write this number down. You're going to want to call in 855-939-1137. That's 855-939-1137. Get your phone ready to dial. 855-939-1137. That's right. We're a live program, and today is, what's today? July 8th, right? And we're a live program, and we are going to let you call in anytime during the show and talk about anything you want. Don't worry about the topic. We'll take your call about anything that has to do with money, finances, or even politics. We're also live on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can even leave comments there as well. If you're watching online, please say hi. It's the only way we know you're watching. At Investor Schooling, we teach real estate investing, stock options trading, how to save money in taxes, how to be financially free, and we even give you the motivation to make money work for you instead of you working for money. Investor Schooling is located in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, right off the Newtown Bypass, serving the New Jersey and Greater Philadelphia areas in a real brick-and-mortar building. Our students are also located in several states with our exclusive web access to classes and seminars. Get ready to learn something new. Get ready to learn the business of entrepreneurship, real estate investing, and stock option trading from your friendly neighborhood expert. That's me, Larry Steinhaus. All right, everybody, we have a really cool show. Our studio is so full today that I could already feel the heat from all the bodies in the room.
The bodies.
Now, probably yours is the worst, Omri. You've got the worst BL. All right, so let me tell you what we got going on today. We have Dr. Deb Anderson, my co-host. Say hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm back. I know you missed me, but I'm back.
We definitely missed you. And, of course, we got Omri, the worst landlord.
Still.
And then we have two special guests. We have Judge Ed Levine. Now, this is kind of cool because we're going to be talking about why Omri is the worst landlord. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking to the judge about evictions and how to, you know, lots of questions. Any questions you want. If you're a tenant, you want to ask the judge a question. And if you're a landlord and you want to ask the judge a question, that's great. And we also have the judge's son, Noah, who when his dad said he was coming here, he said, hey, I'm a big fan of Larry Steinhaus. I want to be on the show. So I said, whatever. We spent the last 15 minutes hooking up a microphone for him. And I forgot to go to the bathroom before the show, Omri.
You can go now.
We don't need you, Larry.
So, yeah. I realize he's got to go.
You can go.
So the problem is we only have an hour, and I know this could easily be a three-hour show, unless, okay, of course, we can get Glenn to convince Gary Arnell to be on our show with us, and we can continue this. But that's really up to him, and that's up to Arnell.
I can give you a bottle if you know.
Starting off with a bang.
All right. Yeah, really. It's like, all right, so, you know what? Hey, Glenn, I always wanted to run a zoo. Here, I've got one, right?
It's free entrance.
All right, but I'll tell you what we want to do. So if you guys are listening, 855-939-1137 is the phone number, and I want to go right to the judge because, you know, look, you know, we actually met during an eviction, right? Mm-hmm. And it was very simple, and I also wanted to make sure that it was completely over with before I had you on the show.
I prefer to call it a landlord-tenant hearing.
Okay.
Because we hadn't gotten to
That's right, we haven't gotten to eviction, you're right.
Yeah.
And actually, I want to talk about that as well, because that's actually, a lot of people have a misconception of how eviction actually works. And just so you guys know, when you actually file for an eviction, you're not really, file for the first time, you're not filing for eviction, you're filing because the tenant didn't pay, and then that's the first case. And then from there, it goes to an eviction.
You're filing because a tenant doesn't pay, or there may be other issues. Mm-hmm. Pets are out of control, other things that you just want straight possession. Or sometimes it's not even money. The lease is up. You want to sell the home. You want to fix the home up or do whatever. So it's generally money, of course. But, right. Yeah, they come in, and then we have to determine what's going on. We have how much is owed.
Right.
What's the process here? Is there an issue? Does the landlord have an issue? Is there something that's not being fixed by the landlord? Is there inhabitability issues? So that's all that gets determined there. But usually, most of the time, it ends up in a judgment. And with that judgment, a landlord can get possession and can have an eviction.
Right. So, like in my case, and I don't want to talk about the whole case.
Yeah.
But you know, it wasn't.
I don't even remember your case.
Yeah, that's great.
That works out.
Did your guy even show up?
The guy didn't show up.
That's why
I made it easier to talk about, because right? He didn't show up. And it was a case where, in my case, it wasn't really a paying issue. It was the tenant was just out of control because he had an issue with drugs.
Yeah.
And that was why I was evicted, which is very weird because I actually evicted a tenant who was paying 4 days in advance every month, which was kind of wild. All right. I'm getting all these messages from Glenn because I got all these microphones going on here. Okay. Anyway.
I have a question.
Yeah, sure.
So you said something about money. So I have a tenant that I'm dealing with, and I'm ready to file, and I'm going to file on Monday, probably at around noon. My question is that she paid me $1,000, but she's still $1,000 behind. So is there like a money limit where you hit a point and you say it's not worth it for this amount and you have to wait it out? Or
it depends on your situation. I have, the big corporate owners that have, 1,000 units or 200 units, some of them, every month, if they're 5 days late, they're filing. They can afford to file 5, 10, 15, 20 landlord tenants a month.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a landlord, it is a hassle. You got to go there. You got to pay the money. That's a decision for the landlord, how many properties you have. If you have management, you let the management take care of that. It really depends. I do have some private landlords that only own one or two properties. Mm-hmm. They'll let it go a few months, and then it gets down a rabbit hole.
That's right. A big mistake.
A few months.
Yeah. So we teach them.
They try to be nice. Yeah. You know how it is.
So I have to ask you, Your Honor, what happened if a landlord will come to you after a few months that apparently the tenant haven't seems to show any good effort?
Mm-hmm.
This is the what, let's say, reason that the tenant will bring to court that will be, let's work it out.
So I try to avoid getting to reasons, because if I get into reasons why tenants can't afford to pay, it's just going to be a sob story. It's going to be emotionally taxing, and it really doesn't matter. I mean, there are situations that happen, but that is not the point. Is you have a contract with the landlord and the tenant to pay every month. I can't get into, well, my dog died or my dad was sick. I avoid that at all costs because it doesn't matter.
Yes.
So then we just get into the money amount, and I really am trying to foster conversation between the landlord and the tenant and a way to work this out and try to work together to get caught up. And most landlords want to get caught up. They want to, if it's a good tenant, they just want to make sure they're paying.
I think all of them.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that the unit will be empty right now.
Yeah.
They need to renovate, right? They need to make it ready. They will have 1 or 2 months that the unit is actually empty.
Yeah, but tenants fall behind. Now, there has been a lot of, especially since COVID, a lot of rental assistance. There's a good program that comes into our court, Epic. They've been great.
We talked about that.
Yeah. And it's helpful. There is a pool of funds, and there's a couple private funds as well. I don't know them off the top of my head that'll help tenants out, especially ones with kids that are having trouble catching up on the bills.
I actually had experience with Epic, and I think Larry too.
Yeah, actually, I haven't had experience with Epic, but interestingly enough, we're starting our own charity. Good, yeah.
No, you were away from the microphone.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're starting. Yeah, it's because I'm controlling everything right now. We have our own charity. It's called lev27.org, and we're starting it. It's almost up. We're almost ready to take donations, and what we're going to be doing is for people who are, you've probably seen this before, where the guy was paying for 3 years, and then all of a sudden, 1 month, he's behind.
Sure.
Something happened. It was a car accident, and you have no choice, but you have to do what you need to do as a judge. But we want to fly in and rescue them and say, hey, look, here's what the judge wanted, here's what the landlord wanted, and as long as they have a plan to get back on their feet, we're going to cover their month or two of rent.
And really, as a judge, I'm just assessing what the monetary outlay is, how much is owed. I really encourage the landlords to try to work out. They're the ones with the ball in hand once they get the judgment. And I explain that to tenants. I'm like, You're not looking at me. You got to look at this landlord, and you got to talk to the landlord and figure out a game plan. Either it's a game plan to pay, do what a payment plan, or an exit strategy. And try to do an exit strategy that's fair and in good faith. And I believe most of the time this happens. I don't know. Once they're out of my court, I don't know. Yeah, if they don't pay, an eviction's filed. If they do pay, I never hear from them. Entry satisfaction. And there we go.
Yeah, right, right. So by the way, if anybody wants to call in, if you're a landlord or you're a tenant and you have questions about eviction or what you can do, 855-939-1137, 855-939-1137, 855-939-1137. Four more times, right? 855-939-1137. Okay, do you want to say it now?
855-939-1137.
Right. And one more time.
All the people with the accent can understand.
Now, the people with the accent, right. 855-939-1137. So one of the things that I always get as teaching real estate and teaching people real estate is, I wouldn't want to be a landlord. Those tenants never pay, right? And I always tell them the reason they're not paying is because you're not filing. And then they say, well, those judges, they're always for the tenant and not for the landlord.
No. Well, look, it depends. I don't even think it depends. But Philadelphia, I heard one of your broadcasts. Philadelphia's a whole different world.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I don't want to get into what goes on in Philadelphia. I know in Montgomery County, I know my colleagues, we're going to have those hearings. We're going to get them filed within 2 weeks. We're going to have the hearings within 2 weeks. We got a process, and we follow the process. And we encourage you've got to file. You really do have to do it. But I do understand landlords, I'll wait an extra month. I've known this tenant and trying to work it out before they get to that point. So, but yeah, no, judges are going to follow the law, at least in Montgomery County we are. Right. And if you owe money, you owe money. And that's the way it is. And if there's an issue with the landlord, if there's black mold or a hole in the roof, we'll talk about it. We'll figure it out.
Well, in Philadelphia, if you have mold, it's Philadelphia is so bizarre. This is why I always say there are two places in the world to invest. One's Philadelphia and one's everywhere else, and I choose everywhere else. I mean, Philadelphia has some of the strangest laws. If they find mold in the house, you literally have to give the tenant back all the money that they paid plus your security. So they could have been there for 9 months. They got to give them all the money back.
Now, what we know about mold, that maybe I agree about mold, now it's going to apply, we start to see it regarding lead.
Yeah, so lead
until,
paint, right.
Until maybe a year ago, you add the disclosure with your lease regarding the risk of lead that can be inside the house. Now we test the houses. So again, I'm talking about Philadelphia at least. In Philadelphia, if there is a risk, if the tenant bring a test and there is any kind of lead risk inside the house, you as a landlord need to take care of them. You need to put them in a hotel to scrape the paint.
It's insane.
I know.
It's absolutely insane.
But one of the keys, and I get this often, is the communication and a paper trail. So often I have tenants, well, I had this problem. Did you ever email the landlord? No. Did you ever? I texted him once. Did you text him again the next day? No. They don't understand. Put it in writing. Email. Right. Get the email. I say email. Text works. I mean, it's legal and it's evidence, but I think email is the best. You got a timestamp and email. And if they don't respond the next day, email again and ask them to respond and just have a fostering written discussion. I mean, it's not everything, but it helps with your case. And especially if you're a tenant and you're having issues with your landlord, put it in writing.
Absolutely true.
I tell you why I'm in love right now. Because
a little closer to you.
Every time, every explanation he just gave was him addressing to the tenant. What did you do? What was your action through this process, progress, to say, I can't pay my rent, I have a problem in my house, anything. And at least according to my experience, in Montgomery also, actually, I was sitting sometimes in front of a judge and he didn't address the tenant at all. He was talking to me all the time. I was in this court twice that the tenant was not there, that the judge actually tried to convince me. He forced it on me. And so I will wait for APIC because it was during COVID.
What do you mean he forced it on you?
We will wait. And actually in the second hearing, he said, I will make sure your tenant will be here next week. And
so he continued it unilaterally?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he said to me,
I hate that stuff. That's so wrong.
My wife was sitting on the bench and she looked at me like, Like, who is going to be responsible that we will be here next time?
Yeah.
He is responsible that the tenant will be here. And this is I think, the problem that many people are afraid of. Sometimes some judges believe that all landlords are like Russian oligarchs. And they have so much. And who they are that they will come and file a complaint against a tenant.
Okay. First of all, I wouldn't unilaterally continue. What I would do is try to get a phone number and call that tenant.
So you did, and that I do that. For you did that at my hearing.
I do.
You tried to call the tenant,
and I do that for traffic tickets. Yeah, well. I've done that for criminal matters
in person. Like in, while
let's say an officer shows up, it's a traffic ticket for registration was expired, and I have the number of the guy, and he lives right around the block. I'll give a call, and 9 out of 10 times, oh, I forgot. Oh, I'm at work. Oh, this and that. And I'm like, look, just email the registration. Did you get it taken care of? Because, you know, that steamrolls and turns out that. Oh, in sure. The landlord-tenant situation, I would never, and I won't say never because maybe there is some hypothetical situation, but I would call the tenant. If the tenant's not there, they're not there. And that's the end of it. And the hearing goes on. We did that with you, Larry.
Yeah, you would call the tenant, and I knew they weren't going to answer.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that. I actually thought that was admirable. You know, I'm sitting there going, I just want this to be over with. But at the same time, I thought it was admirable.
But I also want to say, in general, both parties are good. Everybody wants to do the right thing. There are bad tenants. There are bad landlords. I've seen it both. There's no more bad tenants or bad landlords. There's just every now and then there's a tenant that doesn't get it or a landlord that doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And I've had it go both ways. And, you know, just got to deal with it. It's frustrating. But sometimes you get them both ways.
I get it. All right. So real quick, anybody out there, 855-939-1137, 855-939-1137. You could call up. You could ask about anything you want that has to do with this topic or any other topic. 855-939-1137 is the number.
855-939-1137. Is it good, Glenn?
Are you talking over me again? I'm going to have to mute your microphone.
Yeah, that's the only way, because the mask and tape didn't work last time.
You know, I challenged all my friends in Facebook world to call in. Nobody's calling.
That's right. They're calling.
It's like 95 outside. Everybody's in the pool.
Well, you know, I got like 1,000 Facebook friends, but I think I have 20 that actually go on Facebook and look at it. So, yeah. You know.
So once again, you know, this is I have Judge Ed Levine here. He's a Montgomery County judge. And I'm telling you right now, this is a great, if you're a landlord or if you're a tenant and you want to find out about the actual process of evicting someone or preventing yourself from being evicted.
Filing a complaint.
This is a great place. This is a great time to call. 855-939-1137. Okay. So I got to ask you, Ed. So it troubles me the way Pennsylvania does things. So they have this district court, and then they have the real court, which is what?
Common Pleas Court.
Common Pleas Court, yeah. Right. So what is the difference between a district court and a Common Pleas Court?
So the district court is basically the gatekeeper. And landlord-tenant matters originate out of the district court. So what we do is we do the landlord-tenant matters, commercial and private. We do traffic tickets, non-traffic tickets. We do civil matters under $12,000, so small claims. So basically like Judge Judy stuff, which is fun and interesting. And criminal matters, we are the ones that do the arraignments. So when somebody gets arrested and you have to set bail, we determine what the bail is. And also we do preliminary hearings, which is when a criminal comes in after being arraigned and the Commonwealth has to show that they have prima facie enough evidence to charge somebody with the crimes they're charging them with, which is a low burden, but there are times when they don't present enough evidence and charges get thrown out, maybe not the whole case, maybe some of it. So we have those hearings. It's interesting every day. It is a great gig, and in the state of Pennsylvania, there is a 500-ish MDJs that each have their own individual district. So I know my properties. I know the landlords. I know a lot of the management that comes in. And I get, you know, a relationship with them. So, you know, I understand that. And I do get repeat tenants. It's amazing how many tenants I have that just pay late. They get filed against every month. $1,200 is a rent. They get a late fee plus the filing fees and all that. And they do it almost every month. And they're paying, instead of $1,200, they're paying $1,700 a month. And they just do it forever.
And you see it from from one property to another. So they move from one property to another, and they behave the same way in the new property.
Yeah, there gets to a point where the property owner, after, oh, we have to file 7 or 8 times, we're not going to renew their lease.
Yes.
Then they go to the next property, they do the same. It's not that exaggerated. I've had some that are like 3 or 4 times in a year. And it is interesting. I had one the other day that they signed a 1-year lease. They got renewed, and they were 4 months into the 1-year lease, and I think it was their second time late, and the landlord's like, well, we want possession now. I'm like, no, you renewed the 1-year lease. You know the game they're playing, you're playing. They always pay. So I always do a pay and stay. Pay and stay is different than possession. So pay and stay is, you know, grant judgment if money, I don't even know.
So what is that? Is that 7 days after pay? Is it 10 days after pay?
No, so that timetable it really is determined by the landlord when they get the judgment.
Okay.
The timetable is, okay, the judgment goes in, there's a 10-day appeal period if they think my judgment's wrong. Now, usually both parties are sitting there, they agree on the number.
Sure.
During those 10 days, of course, the tenant can pay and do whatever. Once that 11th day hits, the landlord could file for possession, but they don't have to. And I tell the landlord this. I'm like, you got 120 days. You can work with the tenant. You got this. But then I tell the tenant, it balls in the landlord's court, and if for some reason things fall apart, Epic doesn't come through, this doesn't happen, that doesn't happen, landlord's going to file or could file, and even if they do that, something would get posted on your door, and you'd still have 10 days. A lot of people fear, am I going to go to jail? Are they going to just come in and take my stuff? There's a process. Yeah. It takes time, and you have to just follow the process. So you get panic on the tenants, and most landlords, they know the process. Most of them do. Some of them do.
Interesting. So let's go over the process. So the first thing is my tenant's late, and I always tell people that I file on the 15th. So if I hold to that, which I do, on the 15th I file. So I get a court date on the 1st or the 2nd of the next month-ish, right?
Yeah.
Then I get that court date. Now they owe 2 months, right?
Well, you got to make sure you check, okay, additional rent remaining due at the hearing.
Did you guys hear? Say that again.
So one of the boxes you check, you know, you put down how much is owed,
right,
but then you can also check off additional rent remaining due at the hearing, because the 17th of May, they may owe something, but you have the hearing on June 5th, now they owe June, they haven't paid that. You want to be able to add that into the judgment as well.
I always put TBD.
Okay.
Because you never know, because sometimes they get postponed, and sometimes you get the hearing in a week, sometimes it can be 10 days.
It's one of those things, it's not hard, fast. I think if a tenant objected to additional rent being put into the judgment because they didn't check the box, I'd honor it. But usually tenants aren't aware of that. They don't know. So the TBD would hold up. And by the time we get there on June 5th, that extra money is going to come in. Here's the rent.
So real quick, there's a couple of guys online. Hold on, guys. I know, George and Gary, just hold on. I don't want to end this conversation because it's actually a really good piece of conversation. Amazing. So just stay online. So then you've got, then you go to hearing, and I win as the landlord. Then what happens? He's got 10 days to appeal.
10 days to appeal. Well, both of you have 10 days to appeal. Okay. Either party can appeal.
Right. I'm assuming I won the hearing, right?
And it's not a win. Again, it's a determination of what is owed. And really, that's what it is. Unless it's possession, and you win possession.
Well, I didn't go to possession. That's why I'm going now.
Yeah.
So we have 10 days. So they don't pay. They make a promise to pay. 10 days later, they didn't pay. Now, the 11th day, I can go into the court, and I can file for possession.
You file for possession.
So what's it called the first time you go and file?
Complaint.
Complaint. You're just filing a complaint.
Yeah, landlord-tenant.
Right. So now when I go in for possession, how many days does it take before I get a court hearing for possession?
You don't get a hearing.
Okay.
That is not a hearing. What that is we take the paper, we process it, we give the paperwork to a constable. The constable then posts something on the door saying, here you go. You got 10 days to vacate the property if it's a possession, or you have 10 days to pay the amount that's owed, or you're going to lose possession.
Got it.
And that's what happens.
Yeah, and now the constable reaches out to me or reaches out to the landlord. And now, I don't know if you can answer this question, but would you recommend that the landlord be there the day the constable shows up?
I don't think that's necessary.
No. Somebody's got to open the door.
Well, no, the constable, the day the constable shows up to take possession. I would absolutely have the landlord there. I got some stories. I had one where, and this was a real shame. I got really upset. They worked with Epic. Epic had a deal. The deal was on the table.
Right.
Money was going to be exchanged. And for some reason, the landlord or the the law firm representing them on that 11th day filed for possession, even though they knew a check was coming. The check didn't come yet, but there were email exchanges between Epic and the landlord and everybody. Check's coming. Check still didn't come by the day of the lockout, and the constable, I mean, the manager was there and still told him to lock him out. And it's like, really, you're the one who signed off on this agreement with Epic. The guy was apoplectic, the tenant. He was like, oh my God, I'm getting locked out of my home. I've got this whole, we got it all in writing. And the only thing that's happening is the check just hasn't come yet. That's why a landlord, you got to have a little grace. They didn't. Like, well, I sent a scathing email to them.
I'll go back and forth on that statement. As a landlord, look, I mean, I've never had it go to that last day. But I've had it. I've had tenants where they literally paid on the ninth day, which is ridiculous.
Oh, I've had tenants, not me personally, but I've had my constable telling tenants come as I'm undoing the locks with the money.
Right. Boom. Yeah. No. It never happens with me. It happens with my property manager. In Lehigh Valley. So I manage some of my own properties, which this stuff never happens, but it does happen in my Lehigh Valley properties, and they do. They show up the next day with all the money.
Yeah.
And I think that's crazy.
Well. It's where do they get them? I mean, they may go to a church. They may have a friend. You find it somewhere. They get it. And when they get it and they get it in. And again, most tenants don't want to be late. They don't want to not pay. They want to pay. It's just...
Sorry. So if we're talking about full eviction from beginning to end, it sounds like 45 days is even long.
Oh, beginning... Well, then you got to give the notice to quit, too.
Right, so let's get into notice of quit.
It takes time to get the hearing date.
Let me do this real quick, because I don't want to lose the guys online. George, are you still there, George?
Yes.
All right, what's going on, man? What would you like to talk about?
The slip and fall. I had an incident where one of my tenants fell, and it was like 9 months, and nobody told me anything until the last day she moved, and then they filed for damages. And what can I do as a landlord? Because they're saying that there was enough light illuminating in my apartment, and I can't afford to have...
That sounds like a civil matter.
Yeah, right.
That's not really a landlord. If she's suing you because she slipped and fell, I think the statute of limitations is 2 years. So, 9 months later, I mean, that's... And are you insured, and do you have an attorney for that? And that's a slip and fall sort of thing, so...
Did she actually file, George?
Yeah, she did. The case is settled, my insurance covered it, but I was dumbfounded by how they finagle the system where they can get a claim without really any baseless proof that they fell.
Well, I'll just say this, it's settled. I mean, if the claim was totally baseless and your insurance company wanted to fight it, they'd fight it. Maybe it was baseless, maybe it wasn't. I don't know the facts.
Or maybe they paid them so little it wasn't worth, fighting. But George is mad because his insurance went up.
You would think. You know, it's interesting. I've had a couple of I had one case where it was Uber getting sued by a driver. And you think Uber's, it's for $2,000. They'll probably just pay it or do whatever. They flew a woman out from San Francisco, an attorney, to come out for this case. And she rocked it. She won that case.
Right.
I've had other, who was the other
and
one?
I can tell you why.
Why?
They did that because they didn't want to set the precedent.
Yeah.
They would sooner spend $20,000 fighting the $2,000 case so somebody else doesn't bring up the $2,000 case.
Absolutely.
That was their reason.
I've seen that with other big companies.
If she won, she got her legal expenses, too.
The
Uber lawyer.
The Uber, well, they weren't suing. They were getting sued.
Yeah.
So,
but still, she won the case, so I guess she deserved it.
No, she doesn't get... She doesn't. It's in the United States, this is interesting. In the United States, you don't automatically get the legal expenses unless you sue for them. So you have to do a countersuit to sue for legal expenses.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. it doesn't work that way.
But in a landlord-tenant complaint, there is a section in the form regarding how much your legal expenses are going to be and do you want to add them.
Oh, that's an interesting point. There is that. And it's funny because some law firms only ask for a reasonable amount, actually nominal. I mean, I have one firm, they ask for about $250, $300. I had one guy come in. This guy, his client was a young guy, probably went to your class. I'm not. he purchased a property with a tenant who was living in it for 8 years.
Amazing.
She was about 4 months into a 12-month lease, and he filed to get her evicted because she had a pet cat, and the lease says no cats.
No,
but she had lived there for 8 years with the constructively, she was allowed to have a cat, and it was the most nominal thing. I'm like, is this cat really doing anything? You're just trying to get the property, flip it, and do what you want to do. The attorney for this case wanted $1,500. I'm like, are you kidding me?
For one hearing?
For one hearing. He's like, how about halfway? I'm like, how about nothing, and don't come in here and file until this is done. She was paying. She was doing everything right, except she had a cat. This is an old lady. I'm like, come on. Give it 8 months. You'll get to take possession. Yeah. The lease will expire. But don't try to push it through the system.
Yeah, exactly.
But the $1,500, I was just like, really, man?
All right, so,
George, can we ask how much was the lawsuit?
George,
They originally wanted $250,000.
They got $250,000?
No.
That's what they asked for.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say they got $12,000.
No, they got $27,000.
I was going to say $25,000.
That's even surprising.
Yeah.
I'm surprised
but
that they did that.
As a landlord, what can landlords do to prevent these frivolous lawsuits? Because it's draining to have your insurance goes up and all the frustration and time that you have to deal with someone who's unstable. And
let's have the worst landlord. Let's have the worst landlord answer that question.
Yeah.
Okay, now,
do the opposite
question
of what I'm saying. So everybody do it differently. Some people insure all their properties under one umbrella. I like to do a separate insurance policy for each property and have a $1 million liability for each one of the properties, exactly for this matter. So I won't worry for anything when things like that happen.
So, George, he's basically got my answer, too. The answer is just insure the property. And you know what? Just because it's your insurance company, you don't have to cooperate a lot. You know, you do have to give them little things. And if they say you have to show up for a hearing, you don't have to. You know, they want to negotiate, great. You can tell them, hey, don't pay it. You can do anything you want. But don't work so hard. And most of all, just don't care. I mean, I actually had one where I had this was an old one, about 20 years ago. One of my properties in Trenton, the pilot light in the stove went out. It went out. So the woman, decides to light the pilot light, and you know what she does, right?
She
turns the gas to 500,
and
she puts her head inside the oven and lights the match. Well, the explosion, put scars all over her face, all over her arms, all over her body. And she called me up and she told me what happened 2 days later because she was in the hospital. And I said, oh, my God, that's horrible. And I said, and the first thing I said is, I will get a new stove with an electronic condition out there tomorrow. And I said, do you need my insurance company information? And she said, no, I got it. I got my insurance going to take care of it. Now, she could have sued me. She could have won. She might not have won. I don't really care. But what's the difference? Even if she would have sued and she would have got $100,000, that's what the insurance company's for. I don't really care.
The lawyer in me does want to point out, he said the word frivolous. If it is indeed frivolous, again, the insurance company would have fought it. And it's a high burden to show for it. So I'm not saying it was or wasn't. I don't know what happened, George, but don't assume it's frivolous.
Yeah.
Let the lawyers fight that one out. But things happen. So, fortunately, I don't think it affected you that much. I think you have the property and you're renting it out.
George, we appreciate the call,
man.
Would
you recommend...
Okay.
Thank you. I was going to say, what can we put cameras or something like to prevent that? Or
Sure. Proof? I mean, any evidence you have that counters whatever they're saying happened, that's great. I mean, put a ring... I think as a landlord, you're allowed to have cameras on... Outside,
but not inside.
Yeah.
You got to be really careful with the cameras.
Yeah, I'm sure there's legal thresholds.
Yeah. But okay. But
thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks, man. All right, so real quick, everybody. This is Larry Steinhaus. This is Investor Schooling Live. I'm here with Dr. Deb and Omri and Judge Ed Levine and his son, who eventually we're going to get to. Hopefully, we'll have time. I know he has some questions, some financial questions. But if you want to call in, 855-939-1137, 855-939-1137. You can ask your questions to the judge, myself, or anybody else here, 855-939-1137. And don't forget to go to investorschooling.com and sign up for this Thursday's class. What else do we have to tell them, Deb?
Money multiplier.
Money multiplier, right. Men say we need more Dr. Deb and less Omri.
Oh, there we go.
Men, something like that. Men, you should just say that. So real quick, we have an event coming up on August 12th.
I think it's the 12th.
August 12th. It's the Money Multiplier. We do these events every once in a while. They're full day events. It's $97 to attend. You go to 4mmw.com, the number 4mmw.com, and you can feel free to join us there. All right, let's bring in Ice Cream Gary. What's going on, Ice Cream Gary?
Good afternoon, Larry. I just want to mention I received your book, Money Hack, Thursday.
Good.
It's an easy read, a good read. I'm halfway through. And my next question, Larry, was, did you open your ice cream corner?
We did. We opened about a little over a month ago, and it's doing okay. I mean, you know, it's covering the bills, which is the best part. But, you know, I really was hoping that the guy I have running it would make a little bit more money, but I think in time it will. You know, we had some issues with permits and some issues with this and that, but we got it open, you know, luckily to the power of Facebook, I should say. We had so many followers on Facebook before we even opened that when we posted that we were having trouble opening, somebody tagged the mayor of the town, and the mayor called me the next day and worked it all out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool that, you know, yeah. I'm hanging out with President Trump. I'm hanging out with the Prime Minister of the Bahamas. I've got a judge in my studio, and the mayor of towns are calling me. So I must be becoming somebody pretty popular.
And then don't forget that your book just went bestseller.
That's right. My book, by the way, Gary, my book is now a bestseller, and the Los Angeles Tribune claims it as a bestseller.
Nice.
Like, well, Larry, we're going to petition Greg Stocker to get you on full time.
Yeah, you definitely got to call him up. You got to call on Monday. You got to call the show in the morning show. The Kale, what's it, Kale? Kale and Company show, and you know, and ask right. for Greg and talk to him and say, hey, you got to get Larry Stein has his own show.
There you go, Larry. Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate it. All right. Anybody else want to call in? 855-939-1137. 855-939-1137. 855-939-1137. One more time, 855-939-1137. Hey, Glenn, why don't you take us to a commercial and we'll get back and we'll find out what Noah wants.
This is Larry Steinitz with Investor Schooling. Are you afraid of the Great Reset? Well, the Great Reset won't apply to those who own real assets. At Investor Schooling, we teach you how to own real assets like real estate, gold, silver, and other investments, including stocks, stock options, and even the basics of cryptocurrency. We even teach you how to pay thousands less in taxes legally. So go to InvestorSchooling.com and find out how you can attend a complimentary class this Thursday. InvestorSchooling.com. This is Larry Steinhaus, and you have probably heard my radio shows and listened to my great advice on how you can make more money and pay less taxes. Well, I just finished writing a book on all things I teach at Investor Schooling and on my radio shows. This book is called Money Hacks, and you want a copy of this book, and you can pre-order this book wherever books are sold. Look for Money Hacks by Larry Steinhaus. Hey, it might even be a tax deduction. Order Money Hacks by Larry Steinhaus wherever books are sold, and come see me at Investor Schooling. This is Larry Steinitz with Investor Schooling. The opportunity to retire with a great big real estate portfolio is coming quickly, and you want to learn how to do it. We all know the downturn is around the corner. What does that mean to you? You need to learn how to take advantage of this opportunity, like how to buy discounted properties with absolutely no money out of your pocket. Can it be done? Yes, it can. Can you learn how to do it? Yes, you can. Go to InvestorSchooling.com and find out how you can attend a complimentary class this Thursday. InvestorSchooling.com. This is Larry Steinitz with Investor Schooling. Are you afraid of the Great Reset? Well, the Great Reset won't apply to those who own real assets. At Investor Schooling, we teach you how to own real assets like real estate, gold, silver, and other investments, including stocks, stock options, and even the basics of cryptocurrency. We even teach you how to pay thousands less in taxes legally. So go to InvestorSchooling.com and find out how you can attend a complimentary class this Thursday. InvestorSchooling.com.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Investor Schooling Live. This is Larry Steinhaus. I am the CEO of Investor Schooling. I'm here with Judge Ed Levine. This is a pretty interesting conversation. I'm here with Omri, too. Don't be upset, Omri. I will mention you. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Of course, I'm here with the most important person in the room, or the smartest person in the room, is Dr. Deb.
Hey, everybody.
And we're also here with Noah Levine, too, which we're going to talk about in a minute. So, Noah, why don't you tell us a little bit about why you came today?
Yes.
Yeah, talk closer to the microphone.
Yeah, so I'm here with my dad, who's obviously the judge, and I've tuned into your show a number of times, and I thought it was a good chance to meet you and learn some more about real estate and landlord-tenant and finance, so yeah.
So should I give him a free autograph?
You should sign his book. He'll be so excited. What I thought was great was Noah was surprised that we actually had a pretty decent setup, and he expected some like little hole in the wall place with like microphone coming out of the
desk. Tell everybody, it is
a pretty cool place.
Yeah, tell everybody what you see, because you know most people are watching can see it, But
I see microphones coming out of the table like spider legs, and
What are you, an author of a book?
Could be.
Annoying people.
So you're going for finance, correct?
Yeah. Right now, I'm getting my master's in financial engineering at Lehigh.
So I'm going to tell you right now, everything they're teaching is wrong.
Okay.
Just keep that in mind.
Financial engineering. What does that even mean?
Exactly.
That's, you know, like pricing certain financial derivatives is a good example. Options, the way they're priced, has to do with like the stochastic nature of the equities or the whatever the underlying security is. You know, credit default swaps, trading those, pricing those, that type of, there's a lot, like any trading strategies involved in the market.
Well, I don't think anything that you teach will match at all with what.
No, so he's, and it's interesting, because what he's teaching is he's teaching the actual math, which I purposely don't teach, like the delta, the gamma, the beta. What was the other one?
Row and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we go through these. Every once in a while, somebody forces me to teach this, and I'm like, but it doesn't matter because the price of the option, all of these factors change every second.
Right.
So the price of the option changes, the price changes every second, but all that matters is, are you going to make money or are you going to lose money?
Right.
And I teach how to avoid losing money.
Right.
You know, it doesn't always work, but most of the time it works. So that's what I'm teaching. That's why I don't bother, you know? Like, sometimes I'll say that, you know, I'll talk about the delta, the gamma. Most of the time I'll talk about the delta, but who cares?
Yep.
It's not that important. You know, if the stock goes up 1 point and your option goes up 60 cents, who cares?
Right.
It's not that important. What's really important is how much did you pay for the option, how much are you going to make, and how much are you going to lose if you stick in there too long and keep you know, going to a bad place.
So then, Noah, what's your end game? Like, so you're going to get your master's in financial engineering and then
what? I would like to get into the quant space, which is, you know, using trading different financial securities in different ways to make money. So like you said, trading options is one example of what something, you know, a quant might do, but they also would price these options and make a market for these options. So, you know, that's, and they also, you know, it's not just options, there's ETFs, a lot of debt derivatives, stocks, all of it.
So the best place to go to learn that is go to investorschooling.com.
That's right.
And you can learn how to make money doing this instead of just using all your dad's money for your education. So I had to go back to you. You had, I had a question for you. So you said something interesting. You said the lawyer in me before. And are you a lawyer?
I am a lawyer.
Okay.
I went to Temple Knight School, graduated in 2006. But I do want to point out for these MDJs, the 500 I said,
they don't
I think
have
most
to be lawyers.
Are not lawyers. I think about half. They don't have to be lawyers. And people always ask, well, shouldn't they have to be lawyers? I look at it pragmatically. You know, the lawyer in me says, they should be lawyers. But, you know, there are good judges that know the law that aren't lawyers. There are bad judges that are lawyers that don't know diddly-poo. Okay. You got to learn the stuff. And, you know, I have a good friend of mine. He just got sworn in for a vacant judicial position, and he's been a lawyer 20 years, does a lot of criminal defense, but he's like, I don't know what to do with landlord-tenant, never done it. I'm like, don't worry, I'll teach you. You'll get the ropes in about a month or two.
That's interesting.
You'll be good.
So, you know, I'm going through this whole big thing with the tax collector. You should probably look it up. Talk to Alfarano.
Oh.
Talk to him about it.
Mark?
I don't want to get into the... He's out of it, so you could talk to him about it, but you probably could... talk over a nice game of golf or a beer over that whole thing.
Usually a beer.
Yeah, because it's an interesting case. But I have to take this now to,
Montgomery.
Yeah, Montgomery County Court, because this thing it's been a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll probably tell it to you off
okay.
the air, because I don't want to. I don't know. I'm wondering if it's an ethic issue. It may or may not be.
Well, Amir. Omri had a question for me.
So my question while we were in the commercial break was, what's your recommendation for a landlord? Do you think it's necessary to come with a lawyer?
It depends on the situation. If it's just your basic, hey, he owes me this much money, here's the ledger, I don't think you need a lawyer for that. If it's getting complicated, if you got a nasty tenant that's claiming this, that, and the other thing, you may want to have a lawyer with you, and depends how much experience you have doing that and going into the court. I mean, I get a lot of authorized representatives. They're not lawyers, but they represent, you know, Scully Company that has Hatfield Village, for example. They know what they're doing. But when there are cases with an ornery tenant, let's get the corporate lawyer for this one. So I know it's going to be an interesting one when he steps or she steps foot into the court for that. So it really depends. You know, the little guy landlord that owns two or three properties, it's tough to get a lawyer. It's expensive, you know.
Yeah, but it's also very aggravating.
Yeah.
It seems like that you need to be in the lawyer just to sometimes just so you will be able to present your status. If you have a tenant in front of you, and the tenant, we say there are no bad tenants. There are only bad landlords.
That's what
right. If you have a pro tenant, a tenant that knows what they're doing, and they come in and say, "I didn't sign this lease in this date," while their signature is next to the date, and you need to sometimes deal with people that are pro. They know how to try to use the system, to trick the system.
I'll just say, sometimes having a lawyer doesn't guarantee anything. I've had some bad lawyers come in. They didn't win diddly poo, and I think their client felt, "Oh, well, I have a lawyer, I'm going to win." And no, it doesn't work that way either.
Absolutely not.
So,
yeah. So, yeah. I'm going to tell you. I've had two cases so far, and they're all related to this tax collector issue. And I had it in one court and another court, and in both cases, it seemed like because the township had an attorney and I didn't. It seemed like the judge felt like, you know what, let's just make this guy go away and make him lose and he'll go away.
Yeah.
Because they have to see that attorney again. And that's the way I felt when I left.
Hopefully it wasn't me. I try not to make people feel that way.
You wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. I would be throwing darts at you.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lawyer comes in, they're going to articulate the case. They'll know the case, so they're more prepared. But you know what, as at the MDJ level, I understand people can't afford lawyers, people come to pro se. It actually sometimes can be an advantage not to have one, because I'm going to empathize a little more with the guy without the lawyer, trying his best to just...
Yeah.
And if they do it sincerely, you know, they're swearing on the Bible too.
And they can get away with more. So a pro se, so if I go in, I don't fully understand the court procedure, although I'm learning it really well.
Well, with MDJs, it's pretty loosey-goosey anyway on procedure. I mean, I don't want to keep it that formal, because everything at our level also is de novo, which means if somebody appeals, it's brand new.
Right.
All that stuff we argued and fought about in front of the district judge, it's gone. It doesn't mean anything anyway. They go up to county court, and they're going to argue it, and they're not going to go, "Well, what did they say?" It's not on record. So it's the
note. Yeah, right. I agree. So one of the things I'm actually dealing with right now is I was suing somebody. I won a default case. They didn't. So by the way, just so you guys know, and I'm sure you'll agree, if you ever get a letter from a court that says you're going to be sued, you must answer that letter. You must go to the courthouse and say you're going to defend yourself, or give it to an attorney and tell them you're going to defend yourself. So the person I was suing never did that. They never went to the courthouse. So I won by default. That person received a letter that they lost, and then they have 30 days to appeal that decision. And if they do not appeal that decision within 30 days, it's over.
Done.
Now, the problem is, this person hired an attorney, and they're trying to do a non-pro-tunk, which is absolutely ridiculous, but we'll see what happens.
In your case, it might be. The non-pro-tunk is... It happens a lot in traffic tickets.
So why don't you explain what that means, non-pro-tunk?
Yeah. Non-pro-tunk. Don't ask me what it means in
English. I'll tell you what it means. It means before is after.
Before
or after is before, or something like that. It means, you know, you're turning back time.
You should be a lawyer. You know your Latin better than me. but, you know, in traffic tickets, there are a lot of times people just ignore it. They get the ticket. And then it's 3 years later, they're like, "Oh, my God, I got this, that, and the other thing. I need to get my driving record back. I got to work. I got to do this." They file the non-pro-tunk. It's basically an appeal outside of the appeal period. And then they go in front of a judge, and, "Oh, look, here's what's going on, and I just want to get my license," or whatever gets worked out. But it happens primarily in traffic tickets.
Right.
It's overdue and expired.
Yeah, I think it was a good play by the attorney, but I don't think they stand a chance. From what I understand of this, it has to be a reason. Like, the guy was in the hospital. He didn't receive the letter. The clerk that he filed the response to didn't file it properly.
Yeah, I think the threshold would be higher in a civil,
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm curious to see. I'll let you know how it turns out. But it absolutely blew my mind. Because as soon as I sent him a demand letter, after the 30 days were up, I sent him a demand letter. That's when I heard from the attorney.
The law.
Yeah. So I want the real law. I don't want the law that's made up at the, you know, from that judge that sits behind the counter and makes up his own law.
Now, we don't make it up. I mean, the rules are the rules. Yeah. The law is the law. I mean, but you do get situations where you're trying to do what's right and what's fair. Yeah. I had one. I don't really want to get into detail. I had a tough one the other day. It was a mobile home thing. And there was a dog involved in biting. And
oh, boy.
It was very borderline whether she violated the rules of the homeowners association, and the penalty was pretty severe. It was eviction, and it's an 80-year-old lady. The dog got off the leash, and by the way, the police didn't charge dangerous dog or anything like that. I was just ruling on the eviction and trying to figure out what's fair, because I have a woman who got bit, and I have a woman whose dog bit him, and I have five other people who were vouching for the dog, and it was just hard either way. There was no winning on that one. A lot of times, and this happens with landlord tenants, I'm trying to figure out what's the right thing, what's the fair thing. I've had cases where a tenant is behind and we're talking about it, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to continue this 4 weeks. Just so, you know, if what you're saying is true or what you're saying is true and you need to do this and get that check, maybe we could forego all these issues, come back in 4 weeks. And a lot of times, 4 weeks later, landlord will send in a letter saying, hey, it's been resolved.
That's great.
We don't need to do anything.
Because the authority is involved, so the tenant take it more seriously? That's what you think?
No, maybe they're waiting on a tax return or a health insurance check or something like that. Sometimes it's just a money thing that hasn't come through here or there. It can get rectified.
Hold on. All right, so real quick, this is Larry Steinhaus. This is Investor Schooling Live. I'm here with Judge Ed Levine, and we're having a great time, I guess, talking about being a judge, talking about the law, talking about landlord-tenant complaints. And it's interesting because if you go to court, you become intimidated, right? You actually went to court, Debbie.
Yeah.
Right. You went to court, and you were so intimidated.
I was.
And it was actually she had a possible case, but it wasn't a landlord-tenant case. It was a civil matter, and I was kind of helping her with her a little bit. But I'm not a lawyer, so I can't stand next to her and whisper in her ear.
Yeah.
I actually was sitting in the back and just watching, and she blew it because she didn't want to be aggressive. She was afraid that the judge might say, "Be quiet." You know, the defendant was lying, and she was just sitting there nodding her head and not saying, he's lying. So what is real court etiquette?
Oh, well, you know, it really, at my level, it depends a lot on the judge and their demeanor. I am definitely one of the more lay. I want people to be comfortable when they come to my court. I mean, I have concert posters in my court. So, and I wear flip-flops under my robe. I want it to be a place where people feel like they're being heard and they're getting a fair decision. And I don't want people to feel intimidated. I got interns sitting in the back just hanging out.
Right.
I tried it. You came in. I just wanted everyone to be comfortable. Yeah. It shouldn't be a feeling of intimidation.
Yeah, it wasn't that. When I went, that wasn't.
It was just a frustrating opponent.
It was like, this is what's going on, and it was a very not friendly environment.
Well, you know, if somebody's confrontational, a judge should be able to pick up on that, too. I mean, we pick up on, you know, you're talking, but I'm looking at the defendant, and they're rolling their eyes, or they're exasperated, and that stuff doesn't work. It doesn't play well when you get defendants or tenants or whatever. You can pick up on insincerity. You can pick up on credibility, things like that, and that's part of what we have to do.
That's interesting. I like it. By the way, if anybody wants to call in, we got just a couple more minutes. 855-939-1137. 855-939-1137. Of course, if you want to go to investorschooling.com, you can sign up for this Thursday's class. It's going to be another good class. I got a couple of special guests coming this Thursday. 855-939-1137. Anybody have a question for the judge? Feel free to call in. What's up, Omri? I know you want to talk. I can see it in your face.
Well, I just have a question. So before Omri gets on, and since they're asking to talk to me a little bit more, I do have a question. So one of the reasons that I kept my mouth shut is that I didn't want to be that crazy woman who kept interrupting the other guy when he was trying to tell his story. So, and that was where I was coming from, because I didn't want to come off that way, as you know, keep interrupting.
But that's good. Self-control and patience, you know, and you wait and you're like, Your Honor, this is all false. This is, instead of every time they say something.
So that's what I did, but it didn't work.
Did you lose?
Yeah, I lost. It was not in my favor.
I've been shook.
She didn't do it. She didn't. So the problem was, and sorry, I don't want to get into the case, but it was while I was watching it, the guy kept saying that when you brought it in, it had all these problems, and it didn't. That was, you know, so it was a transmission case. So it had all these problems. And every time you said that, it had all these problems, you should have interrupted. None of those problems happened when I brought it in. That happened when I picked it up. And that was the difference. That was what you were suing for. You were suing because you broke your transmission. And, you know, and he was saying that when you brought it in, it did this, it did this, and it did this. And you didn't say anything. That was where I would have absolutely. He's lying.
Can I just say I hate those car cases. I haven't had one in a while, but man, let me tell you, I don't know diddly about cars. And I get a mechanic saying this, and I get somebody else saying that. I mean, in general, it's always nice to have, especially if you're the plaintiff and you feel like the mechanic did something wrong, to have another guy who's a mechanic there saying, "Well, here's what I saw." Yeah. Having an expert, basically,
yeah,
because
sure.
The mechanic's gonna say, "Oh, I did this, this, and this." It's tough. It's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And also what you're battling against sometimes is these mechanics are local. They live in the district where the judge lives. Maybe they even fix the judge's car. That would be a recusal. But, you know, you kind of know some of the people in the area. The mechanic would process. Well, you might have filed it where you live. So I don't know the details. All I'm saying is I hate car auto cases.
So here's the question. So you mentioned the word recusal, which is a really interesting word. It means that you can't. You have to walk away from the case because of.
I feel like I can't be fair and impartial.
Right. So what happens now if I have a couple of units that I need to go in front of you now because you're here?
I would say I don't think I would need to recuse. You've been on the show. I'm friendly with lawyers. I'm friendly with police officers. You can have a friendly demeanor in a conversation. Do I feel like if you come in and you got a stinker of a case, I'm going to still rule for you? No, I'm going to rule against you. And that's the type of relationship I want to have, to be able to tell you the truth. Sure. I have that with lawyers. I have lawyers. I'm friends with them. Like, you had a dog and you lost, and they know it. Sometimes they know they have a dog, but they got to come in and advocate for their client. So it's something I have to really be cognizant of. I don't want to recuse if I don't have to, because that passes it off onto another judge. I don't want to give one of my colleagues, you know, extra work that they don't need. So I take it seriously, but I think I understand where that threshold is. So if you come in front of me, I think I could be totally fair. I don't have
We didn't have you on the show until I wanted to make sure that the case we were on was completely over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what we waited for. That's why this took so long. So the other question is interesting is, what do, when you go to the court, do you say judge or do you say your honor, or does it not matter?
It doesn't matter to me. To other people, it might matter. I mean, it tends to be the more disciplined people, like police and military, who've been brought up on that type of discipline, always your honor or judge. And then the people that are loosey-goosey, it doesn't bother me either way. I don't get hung up on the title at all.
Yeah, I was just wondering what the correct way was.
Actually, like Judge Ed.
Judge Ed, there you go. All right, guys, I've got to sign out now, Army, so be quiet. I want to thank you so much, Ed, for coming here today.
Thank you.
I want to thank you, of course, Noah, for coming as well.
Thank you.
And, of course, Dr. Dev and The Worst Landlord. And, of course, Glenn Page, who is the ultimate excellent engineer, who didn't even burst in and interrupt today. It was fantastic. So we had an interesting show today. And if you guys want to find out more about Investor Schooling, go to investorschooling.com. You can sign up for this Thursday's class. I promise you it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's investorschooling.com. We will see you on Thursday.
This program is paid for by Investor Schooling. All opinions or statements expressed on the program are solely those of Investor Schooling or their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.